it's anticipation. Hope you're in the right session. This is app 202, okay, an absolute beginner's guide to Windows 8 apps. We had to drop the with XAML and C# off the end there because it was running off a little bit. Let's quickly tell you why this session is awesome, then I'll tell you a bit about ourselves. This session is going to be incredible because it's about Windows 8, and I can see the popularity in the room because of the popularity of Windows 8. Hands up, who's done development for Windows 8? Okay, that's good, because it's a bit of a beginner's guide, so you guys may not get too much out of it, but we'll go for there. So absolute beginners, there's no stupid questions, only... No, I won't say that. So do raise your hands, do come and ask questions. We'll be around afterwards. We'll also be around at the Nokia stand in the lunch area afterwards as well for questions. We'll hand-hold you through what we're doing. Lots of useful tips and tricks that we've come across while developing for Windows 8, and heaps of links in the first part of the presentation at least. So the presentation will be online later on to download, or come and grab it off a USB stick afterwards as well. So who are we?
I'm Ian Randall. So I blog on XAML.geek.dead. I'm KiwiPom on Twitter. I'm slightly obsessed with angle brackets, and I recently joined into Mark Metro.
Yeah, and I'm Ben, and NZBen on Twitter. I call myself a recovering manager, but I'm a coder. I've managed for a few years and realized that coding is what I loved more, so I do that. Been around the traps, all the various large companies around the place, and also now with Marker Metro. So Marker Metro, we are a small team of guys that all we do is Windows Phone and Windows 8 apps. So we just do Windows apps, focus 100% on it. So what are we going to show you in this session? The first part of the session will be a Windows Apps Design 101, stuff that you need to know, rules you need to follow to make great Metro apps, make great Windows 8 apps. I think there was a session on this earlier on. What we're going to do also is drill down into some of the specifics of design in XAML and the specifics of design in code as well, so the things you have to take care of as opposed to the concepts. And then Ian's going to... He's going to cover development 101, so show you some actual codes, some actual angle brackets and bits and pieces behind there. So let's kick into design straight away. Hopefully, a lot of you have seen this. Who knows the principles of great Metro apps? Oh, okay. All right, so I'll go through them in a bit more detail. Actually, who doesn't know the principles of great Metro apps? Cool, that's good. Just making sure that all of you have arms. Good. So... These principles, I'll go through them in detail, but there's a core set of guiding principles around writing good Metro apps. I'm going to keep saying Metro because, to me, Metro still speaks to the design language, the look and feel of Windows 8 apps. Okay, so the things we're building, the trademark is Windows 8 apps. The design language we use is Metro, and I don't think there's anything wrong with using that word when we're talking about the way they're laid out on screen as opposed to some sort of system that they run under. Okay. So I'm going to go through these one by one. The first one is talking about craftsmanship. When I think of craftsmanship, I think of a guy with a lathe and a little chisel being very, very careful in what he's doing and very creating beautiful things and objects that are useful. And he takes pride in his work. He or she, they take pride in their work. And they like to produce things that are great to look at. They don't cut corners. You know, they leave the corner cutting to... Perhaps the IKEAs or the companies, you know, the companies around the world that sell to the warehouse, this sort of thing, right? So I've got a set of drawers at home. One is from the warehouse, the other one is hand built, and the difference is amazing. Everyone knows this. And so when we're talking about craftsmanship and Metro apps, we're talking about hand built, taking careful care, but also following a set of rules, a set of well known rules that are in place. Just like the master craftsman will. Even if his piece is completely unique, if he's building a set of drawers or building something where he's putting wood together, he'll use dovetail joins. Okay? And they'll be behind the scenes where no one can see them, and they might have a tiny touch of personality to them, but they're the same as anyone else's dovetail joins. They're exactly the same. And that's because that's the best way to put two things together, two pieces of wood together on an angle. So just like that, in the Metro land, we have rules we follow, even if we're designing something completely unique. Does that make sense? So the rules in Metro come in a few flavors. It was the grid, the font ramp, and some things about the snap and scale. You saw me playing with the apps at the beginning, hopefully, and I was doing snapping of the apps to different sides of the screen. So the rules in Metro, the rules in Windows 8 relate to the size of that snap view, the fact that you have to do a snap view. Okay, I'm going to go into these in detail again so you can see what we're talking about. Hands up, who knows what that is? Square?
You guys said you were beginners.
That is a square, but I'm also going to say that's a pixel. I'm going to say this is one pixel in Metroland. What's that? A grid? Okay. In Metroland, this is one subunit. 5 by 5 pixels is a subunit. Okay. So when you're spacing anything on the screen, you space 5 pixels, 10 pixels, 15 pixels, and no other spacing. That's the rule. Or I'll come down there and I'll beat you. Okay. What's that? Yes, there you go. We're learning. We've learned something. That's a unit. So we'll go back. Pixel. Subunit. Unit. So a decent sized space in Metro is a unit, 20 pixels. Okay. And that's them in summary. This is the Metro grid. And you will learn it, and you will love it, and you will use it. Okay? This is like an army training course. And if you know, my boss, Keith Patton, CEO of Marker Metro, is a, what's a nice word? He is picky, and if things are off by one pixel, he sees them, and we fix it. And that's what you should do when you're building Metro apps. If things are off by one pixel, don't just go, oh yeah, that's good enough. Fix it, you know? We either snap screenshots and draw lines on them with our, you know, Photoshop, or we've been known to sit there with phones and a sharp edge and hold them on the phone just to see how things are going. And that's the sort of thing you need to do when you're a Metro craftsman, okay? There's also tools you can use for that, like grids to help you. Sorry, this is a summary of the Metro grid. And you can see that it's 5 units, yes, 5 units on the top of the screen, and in from the left as well. I'll show you that in detail here. Okay. So 5 units to the bottom of the header, and then 7 units to the content. There you go. So you can see how the Metro spacing, the Metro units, apply to the Metro screen. And you can start to see there what's coming together as an app. So that'll look familiar if you've used Windows 8 at all. They all look very much like this. And that's for a reason. It's because they're on grid. Right. So I'm going to show you a little demo now of a tool we love to use as well. Sorry, this button. Does it work? Cool. I'm just going to run up this app. So this app is just a file new project. And the only change I've made to a file or new project is add in a reference to a tool we call XAMLSpy, or a tool that's called XAMLSpy. You should grab XAMLSpy if you've got any interest in doing Metro apps. It's like a DOM browser, if you're in HTML land, for XAML. Okay, it allows you to inspect what's going on inside the rendering of the page. But one of the cool tools it has is a little thing, you can't read it, but it's called Show Grid. Okay, and there you see that the file new project is perfectly on grid. Okay, so you guys at the other end can't see, but if you have a look, there is no pixel between the left-hand margin and the first grid object. Likewise, the baseline of the text is perfectly on grid. Okay, each item, here and here. So use XAMLSpy, use tools. Like I say, if you're really desperate, just get a piece of paper and hold it against the screen and have a look and see if you're on the grid. Yeah, question. Say again. Whereabouts? Oh, right, between the objects, yeah. 10 pixels is a common... So for hard-edged objects, 10 pixels is a good spacing. For soft-edged objects, you want to go a bit more, 20 or 40. Yeah. Yeah.
Another question here?
Are you talking about pixels and level?
Good question. Good question. No, they're device-independent pixels, okay? So the Metro grid will always be in device-independent pixels. And so as you go to larger screens, Windows 8 will deal with that for you. And if you say, I want to space, you know, by 20 of these things, that's why when you say put a margin, you don't say 20px, you just say 20. And that's 20 device independent pixels, and so on a larger screen it'll be large, a larger space. Okay, but it'll all be proportional. Some interesting things there. If you're going to attend this session at the same time tomorrow in the same room, we're going to go into a lot more detail on this, on the grid and how it works and how things behave. Because you'll notice things like as I roll over these elements, the highlight is actually outside of the box, outside of the grid. So if you're doing a brand new metro project and you go file a new project, have a look, there'll be some weird numbers in there. There won't be 120, there'll be 117 and 116. And you need to understand why that is, and we'll go into that tomorrow, but it's a bit too deep for what we're going to do today. The reason for that is to deal with these highlights. Okay. So just summing up that, the grid, okay, that's the question you had before. 10 pixels between similar elements or elements with hard edges, okay, so those elements with backgrounds. You can go more if you think you need to, for things, if you've got text that's left aligned and with a ragged right edge, you might put a bit more spacing in there. 4 units or 80 pixels, that's the spacing between groups of units. Okay. There's a really good reference, again, this presentation will be online, you can get this stuff. Okay. The next rule in Metro is the font ramp. Okay. Don't be tempted to go and put bold and italics and 20 pixel, 40 pixel, different sized fonts on the screen. Use this list of fonts. If you need to break out of this list of fonts at all, think really, really hard before you do it. It can be very restricting, but what you'll find is if you use just this font ramp, your app will look very metro, it'll look very good. Okay? If you find yourself using intermediate sizes, you'll start to kind of tax the user and tax the user interface. Okay? Sego UI is the only font to use. Okay? The exception to that is if you're going to replace the font across your entire app because you're going for a whole different look and feel. But otherwise, just stick to that font. Okay? Just a final thing on rules and craftsmanship is a great book called Dancing About Architecture. You should read it. It's actually a book about teaching. But the concept is that writing about music is about as relevant as dancing about architecture. And it's talking about thinking about things in different ways. And one of my favorite quotes from it is that if you just follow the rules, if you just follow all the same rules as everyone else, the best you can do is be as good as everyone else. So follow the Metro rules, but break the rules where you want to and where you need to make your app look different and fantastic. Does that make sense? Okay. Fast and fluid, it's a laxative on the market. No, it's not. Fast and fluid is another Metro design principle. What does it mean? It means make things move on screen, make animations happen, make things come onto the screen one by one. All right? Animations in Windows 8 XAML are quote unquote free. There's some great child animation things we'll show you in a sec. Responsiveness, if you were in Ivan's talk just before about async await, stay off the UI thread. Do everything in the background thread. Okay, everything that takes longer than 50 milliseconds in Windows RT, in WinRT, the runtime, is async. You cannot call it synchronously. So call those things asynchronously, let them do whatever they want in the background thread, then come back and update the UI. It even means doing things like some of the tricks we use when we go to a new page on the phone, especially, which can be slow to even load user controls, we just wait for 25 milliseconds on a different thread. Go to the page, wait, and then carry on to everything else. And that lets the phone navigate, bring up the screen really fast with nothing on it, and then render everything. And just that little trick is enough to trick people into thinking the app's running fast. Okay? It is running pretty fast, but it makes it feel even faster. Okay. We're going to talk more about async await in App 301, especially around exception handling. And if you'd seen Ivan's talk before, that was a good one to go to. Ian's going to do a little quick demo on how easy animations are in Windows 8.
Okay.
Probably should switch the screen. There you go.
Here we go. So I've just... Everyone hear me okay? So the simplest of demos to kick things off. What I've got is a very simple page. I've got a few things on it. It's just going to load up a few items on a screen. And let me just check that that's ready to go. Yep. And if I hit go, so you, it all happens pretty quickly, okay? So if you watch the screen, it's going to put those four things up on the screen, okay? So when we talk about making our apps fluid and making them seem more natural, and we talk about fast and fluid, we can do very simple tricks like adding in animations. And as a WPF developer, and when I think animations, I think triggers, and I think, okay, I'm going to have to get my head around this. And certainly we can dip into Blend, and we can look at all the various ways of applying animations. With Windows 8, it's actually pretty simple. So within the grid, I stop that. So within the grid, I'm just going to add in this property called children transitions. This describes the transitions that we want the children of our grid to contain. So I need to create a collection, a transition collection, and within that transition collection I can actually put the transitions I want to run. And I'm just going to do an entrance theme transition. Now this is pretty subtle. Again, you have to watch it first, we'll improve it in just in a second, but you should just see a very, very subtle movement. Did everybody get that? Really subtle. Let's actually say that's a bit too subtle for me. So, go back here. And that entrance theme transition, I'm actually going to change that to come in from a horizontal offset of something like 350. And if I run that again, the transition's just that bit more pronounced. Make it more obvious, and you can tweak those numbers and play with those numbers to give the effect that you want. So actually adding animations to your screen is literally as simple as that couple of lines of code. And before I just quickly hand back to Ben, I just want to point out that it doesn't have to be a horizontal offset, it could be a vertical offset, and it doesn't have to be a positive offset either. It could be negative. So if this were a positive offset, it would go it would travel up. But because we made it negative, the boxes travel subtly down.
Cool.
Okay, so that's it.
So there's lots of other free animations in there. You saw when Ian was typing, there was add, remove, there's reposition, theme transition, there's all these built-in transitions. And they all, if you've got a list box you're adding things to, you can actually have things added one by one, all that sort of stuff. So have a play. Just go in there and fiddle with those animations and have a feel for your app and see what it feels like as you use them. Authentically digital is the next Metro principle. So what does this mean? A little bit of a sidetrack, but there's a quote from Marshall McLuhan. Everyone probably knows the medium is the message. It was very popular back when, soon after TV became incredibly popular. And it was the point that the medium of television was actually, giving us information and changing the human race as we watched it. Not just the content on the television, not just the TV programs and the advertisements, but the TV itself. Okay, that same thing is what's going on right now with the internet and with screens. The screen is our medium. It's what we do as developers, and it's as important to this is I'm not overstating this as important to the human race as the television, internet, everything else. When you're writing a line of code, you are influencing people. Okay, and you're writing it for a screen. You're not writing it for a leather-bound notebook. You're writing it for a screen. So when we say authentically digital, we mean embrace that. Embrace the screen. Embrace the touch note, the touch sensitivity, the mouse, everything else. And sometimes it's easier to show what's not authentically digital than it is to show what is. Okay? So this is the new calendar app in iOS, in OS X, rather. And I don't know how you feel about it, but the fact there's stitching on there, there's fake tear off at the top, there's page curl animation when you change pages, is, I think, just going a little bit too far beyond what we do on our screens. It's adding stuff that's meant to make you feel like you're using a nice tear off calendar, but it really just gets in the way in my mind. The same thing with Find My Friends app. It's actually wasted space to put that stitching there. That space could be used for content. So authentically digital is don't put fake things on the screen that don't exist in the digital world Okay? Don't use what's called skeuomorphism, which is trying to represent real-world things in digital. You're on a screen, so behave like you're on a screen. The other things that means is use all of the screen. Don't put extra Chrome in there where you don't need it. They go right to the edges of the screen. You know that on Windows Phone, everything goes right to the edges. Same thing on Windows 8. Bleed off the edge to show people there's more information there instead of putting a scroll bar in and wasting space. Okay? You can be more efficient than a fake page turn. You know, a quick navigation to the next page gets the user to where they want to go faster rather than a slow page curl. Does that make sense to everyone? Okay. Authentically digital. Use fonts and white space instead of putting Chrome on the screen to show where they can go next instead of taking up space. Okay. Which leads me on to do more with less, another Metro principle. There's this point of content over Chrome. That's where we talk about using the grid, using the font ramp, and using spacing to denote where things are on the screen and what you can do next, as opposed to using Chrome with things like borders and title bars, this sort of thing. You won't see those in Metroland. Okay? The other part of do more with less is fierce reduction of unnecessary elements. Okay? Think about what the user needs to do and only what they need to do and take everything else away. If they need to do it, if there's a secondary action and it's one click away, that's okay. An example of that is an app we worked on recently for Plunkett. They had an iPad app that's in progress, and this is an example of the iPad app. And this is, this is standard iPad and healthcare app design. And I guess a few years ago, this looked interesting and sexy, and it's all iPad-like and new. But to me, it looks busy. It looks like there's too much information on the screen. When we redesigned it, we reduced the amount of stuff on the screen. Okay, and we said, what is the most important thing to the user? Most important thing was appointments. Appointments aren't anywhere in that landing screen. So we brought those to the fore. Everything's there. You can right-click on the screen when you're running the app, and you'll get a navigation bar, and you can go anywhere else in the app. You can right-click on things. You can tap on things. You can drag things around. You can semantic zoom. It's all there, and it's all just as easy to use. But it's cleaner, and we've reduced the elements on the screen, and it's easier to use. Okay? So it's a fierce reduction and doing more with less. So the app looks better, acts better, but it has less on the screen. Okay, the next, I think the final principle is win as one, which means be part of Windows, be part of the operating system. If you follow those rules, the font ramp and the grid, everything else, your app will feel like part of Windows, and people won't be jarred by a transition to and from that app. And also, if you use the facilities within Windows 8, search, the share charm, settings charm, then you can actually, it helps you get rid of stuff off your own app. You don't need a search bar anywhere in your Metro app at all. You don't need a search box in your app because the Windows 8 search will do it all for you, and we'll show you that later on. Okay? You don't need a settings panel anywhere in your app, okay? Because the settings charm will invoke that for you. You don't need a settings button anywhere. Okay? And be consistent, follow the rules, except where you should break them. So that's just a summary of Design 101 for Windows apps. So when you're thinking about writing an app, come back to these principles. Think, am I taking care with what I'm doing? Am I looking for those one pixel offsets and fixing them? And if not, please do. Is it fast and fluid? Is it responsive? Is it easy to get to the next page? Is it authentically digital? Do I have leather all over the place? Have I reduced everything as much as I can, and am I working with the platform? So, yeah. Now handing off to Ian.
Click the next slide.
Yep.
So I thought long and hard about what slides I was going to present to you guys. Yeah, that's probably enough. So what I want to do in the first instance, I just want to take you on your first few baby steps in the Windows 8 platform. Has anybody actually done this? Has anybody fired up Visual Studio 2012 and hit File New and seen what comes out? Very small number. Okay, so let's show the rest of you what happens. Actually, let's just fire up a new instance of Studio. So, Visual Studio 2012, this is the release candidate running on the RTM build of Windows. This is all available. And it ships with a whole set of new templates. So I'm assuming, we kind of said it was an absolute beginners to Windows 8. I'm assuming you guys are mostly devs, .NET developers. Yep, okay. So you're familiar with hitting file new and getting a series of templates. How will I start my application? I potentially could choose one of these templates to get me going. Well, with the 2012 builds, we've now got these extra Windows Store application options that I just want to quickly show you what they look like. So blank applications, as you'd expect, there's nothing there. The grid application is the one that Ben showed you earlier. The grid application actually splits your gives you a couple of views where it has can I zoom this here? So this view here, which actually gives you that high-level grid view, where you take a collection of data, put it into groups, and you suddenly have a collection of grouped collections. And you present those groups in this grid view here across here. The template will also give you some navigation that will allow you to sort of dive into those groups and see the items within it, and it'll even give you an item view for each of those items within your group. And it'll spit out some dummy data that you can then swap out for your own data as you see fit. So that's the grid app. The split app is a little bit simpler. It's very, very similar, and it's just sort of splits that list view here. It's like a master detail control. So you've got your master list here and the detail on the right there. And again, you've got this extra view here. So when we actually fire an app up, the template's doing some work for us as we would expect. And the first thing that's interesting, when Ben talks about using the font RAM, and when he talks about following the rules and using the standard font sizes and so on. I haven't done anything. I've just literally hit file new. I've got this app. It's been written for me, and it's come with this file called standardstyles.xaml. And within the standard styles, I've got a whole collection of styles. So one that's interesting, one or two that's interesting, I just want to point out is we've got a header text style that comes with a specific font style, a subheader that comes with a specific font value. So we can just tap into these standard styles by accessing them as static resources.
Why aren't those sizes the ones from the font RAM?
Font RAM are point sizes. These are DIPs, device-independent pixels. So, yeah. So that's partly why you should use those, because you don't have to remember 26.667 DIPs equals, I think, 20 point or 12 point, whichever one it is. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a whole collection of styles that come for free. The other thing I wanted to talk to you before we actually sort of wrote some code, I just wanted to show you what happens in the back of the app that gets the application class that gets created for you. I'm not going to go over this in too much detail, but this unlaunched, this is our entry point for when the user has actually accessed our application via the tile in the start screen. So if someone's clicked on the tile, the control will come into this method. Okay? And the work that it's doing is based around this piece here called frame. Is this font size big enough? Can people see? Yeah. Now the frame is the thing that's going to allow us to navigate around the application. So it's going to give us a few methods like go forward, go back, can go forward, can go back. And it's going to allow, and also navigate. It's going to actually let us move from this page to that page to that page and control that flow. It'll keep the navigation stack for us, it'll allow us to move back in that navigation stack. And so it's an important piece that we need as Windows 8 developers. We need to understand how this works. The way that navigate works. If I just go further down, I reach the line of code that says, okay, I'm now ready to actually start my application. I want you to navigate to this main page. And by doing this, We actually pass in the type of the page that we want to navigate to, and the frame will understand that that means it needs to go and spin up a new instance of that piece. And it will pass in, as a second parameter here, it will pass in any arguments we want to send in. So we can just pass an argument in there. And then in the back of the main page code, we can actually access the parameter that got passed in. So this is how we can actually pass these parameters. Can you guys see that? So the parameter that we actually sent in is the second argument in that call to navigate. We can actually pass the state of our application around the various pages as and when we need. Okay. I just run that. It's not a terribly interesting application. It's also quite dark. Before I make it light, I'm just going to stick a text, piece of text in here. No, not that one. Cancel. Solution. Let's just chuck stop. Okay. So I'm just going to put a text block in here. I'm going to give it one of those standard styles. Incidentally, productivity tip number one, if you install ReSharper, you can control space that and it'll go find the static resource for you. Text. Okay. So there we have light coloured text on that dark background. Okay.
Ian, that's not on grid.
It's not actually on grid. I'll show you another app which is on grid in just a moment. Okay. So within the object, the application object, the thing that actually defines the application that we're running, we have the ability to set properties within the XAML here. And one of the properties we can set is the requested theme, and we can choose between dark and light. So switching that whole theme between make this a dark class compared dark app compared with making it a light one is as simple as just setting a property on the application object.
So it's not like phone where the system defines that. You can choose that. So the best thing to do there is when your app design is done, work out whether it's mostly dark text or mostly light text, then set your theme based on that, and then work from there. Yeah.
And since it's not on grid, thank you for the constructive criticism, Ben. Yeah. If I actually wanted to then go and design this grid in a better way, I can actually use this little option here, which is just says show snap grid. Okay, so I can actually draw that grid here. The interesting little gotcha here is that these are 4x4, not 5x5.
They're subunits, but they're not. Yeah.
They are subunits. They're useful as a reference, but they're not drawing the grid as per what the Metro grid is. But it's still a handy tool that you can just fire that up and use it to style your spacings.
And subunits, 4x4 or 5x5.
Sorry, those are the units, the 20x20 pixel dip units, but they should be shown as probably 5x5. Yeah.
Okay, so I want to show you an app that's a little bit more along. So before I show you any code, I'll tell you what I'm trying to do. When you do a lot of public talking, when you write a lot of code to show people, you tend to have your own personal favorite APIs to call to get data and show. And I like hitting the Stack Overflow data API because it's free and it's JSON and it's easy. Ben likes color lovers because he loves colors.
Yeah.
So the point of this app I'm going to show you is I'm going to hit a service on Stack Overflow and say, can you give me the top 30 users, please? And it's going to spit some JSON data back. I'm going to turn that JSON into user objects, and I'm going to throw them up on the screen. Okay, so it's a pretty simple app. Okay. I'll just show it you running. So is that on? Is that on grid, Ben?
I think the title is, but not the rest of it. Yeah.
Okay. So this is the first thing that we've done. We've gone to the service. We've got some data. It's turned it into a user object, and we've thrown it up on the screen. Now, obviously, that's not terribly useful because we don't know which users they are. So the next thing I'm going to show you is the concept of templating. So each one of the users that you can see up on the screen, that's an item. And all we need to do is to define an item template to describe, based on the properties that we've just found from the API, describe how we want to present that data on the screen. So if I go into the users page, it's a pretty simple page. I'm going to close that. Okay. So the code here should be familiar to you based on the previous demo. We've got an entrance theme transition going on. This is where we have our 7 units. Each unit is 20 logical pixels, so we actually have 140 pixels of logical pixels of depth in the top row. We're going to stick a grid up in the top row, and the left-hand column of that grid is going to be 6 units, or 120 logical pixels across. So this is where we're following the rules, spacing out the title as per what we want. Okay, and I'll skip down to the grid in the lower row, in the second row, which is 0 index, so it's index 1. And I've just dropped in a list view, and this is the control that's going to list out the items that we find from our service. Okay, so here's our data template. Here's our item template. It's being described by a data template. Obviously, that's not terribly interesting. So I'm going to bore you all senseless by typing this in. No, I'm not. I'm just going to paste it in. Okay, so we now have something a little bit more interesting around a data template. Now, how did I come up with a template like this?
I was going to ask you that. How did you come up with those numbers, 110 by 480?
I'm really glad you asked me that, Ben. So, To come up with a sensible template for your data, for your grids, to make it work for you, again, it's the same consistent message. Go back to the standard styles and see what it can do for you. So if we go back into the standard styles XAML, and we can start looking for templates, and it's got some templates in there. Template's probably a bad thing. Let's look for, is it data template?
Yeah.
So this is a 250 pixel square item template. It's grid appropriate. Okay. So this is an example of the sort of template we could use. And I knew that for the shape of the result that I wanted, I actually wanted this 500 by 130 item template. So I've literally copied this data template. And where this is binding to properties that it expects to see on the sample dummy data that it ships in the template, I've just swapped it out for properties that I expect to see in my model that I've just grabbed out of Stack Overflow. Is this all making sense for people?
The other way you could do it is make a view model that has image, title, subtitle, description in there, but that's a bit, you know, it's a bit prescriptive, so copy and paste if you need to.
So I'm going to run that up. And hopefully we'll see that we've now got some names and some faces and some reputations. Oops. Okay. Okay, does that all make sense? So the next thing we're going to talk about is async and await. So was anybody in the previous session? Yeah. You guys are going to follow this one. It's much, much easier. I've got on the back end here, I have an asynchronous method called search async. No, I don't. Use this page view model. Let's go to the users. Use page view model. Turn it off. Load uses async. Okay. Okay. So the logic that we're following here is we have a collection of users. It's just it is an observable collection. I'm setting a flag called isLoading. Okay, so the setting that flag on and off is going to activate the progress ring that we saw, the control that we saw. That's just a standard control that comes with Windows 8. I'm creating a task. I'm calling this awaitable, this asynchronous method from some service and bringing it back as a task. And when that task actually comes back, I'm writing this continuation here, passing the task in, and then going ahead and doing this piece of work here. Okay. So if anybody's done any programming with the task parallel library, this should be familiar. Okay. But as was mentioned in the previous session, we can actually simplify this with Windows 8 and with WinRT, with C# on WinRT. Okay. So in order to make this thing do the same thing, I'll tell you what I'll do is I will I'll copy it and then just leave it here so we can see what it used to look like. Okay. So in the first instance, I'm going to decorate this class with the async keyword. Now, an important distinction to make is that this is not telling the compiler that this is now an asynchronous method. This is telling the compiler, hey, heads up, because you're going to need to split the following code out into pieces. And the pieces are going to be the code that I want you to run on some other part of the system, on some other background thread, and the code that I want you to run later when that task finishes and it loops back into this method. So it's setting up like a little state machine. You're going to call into this method a couple of times, the first time to kick it all off and the second time to carry on. Okay, so it's exactly the same as the TPL version with the continuation, right? And the way that we actually do this is with the await keyword. Okay. So I can get rid of that. And now, in fact, I'll come to this in a minute. I'll make it go, get rid of the red. Now that we're awaiting this call, the thing that's going to come back is no longer a task. Okay, so the compiler is going to take care of that for us. It's going to strip out the taskiness, which I think is the way Ivan described it in the previous session. It's going to strip all that away from us so that we don't need to worry about continuations on that task. It's going to simply say, well, you wanted this thing to return a user collection. So we can assign the user collection to the result of that awaited call. And then we can just carry on with our flow, and suddenly it looks a lot more logical. If I get rid of that. And hopefully you agree with me that that actually reads a lot nicer than the TPL version. It looks like it's operating sequentially, but in actual fact, the compiler is sending you off to other places to do other pieces of work whilst keeping the UI thread responsive. That's really important. Does anyone have any questions about async and await? Right. So the question was, if you put a method in where?
After the false gateway.
After this one? Oh, if you do something after here?
Yeah.
So by the time you've hit here, you're running synchronously, but you're in the second run through this. You've done the background work, and you've come back into this method.
Phones are off.
That's the aliens. You've come back into this method, and the code is running synchronously. Okay, so it comes in here, does this work, and it does this work. It then sets about doing this work and returns control back to the thing that called it.
Yeah.
So the UI has called this method, and it now has control. It's done the first two lines in a few clock cycles, and it's set about doing this. Just imagine the bit I'm pointing on the screen. This work here.
So if anything was called after load users async and whatever was calling it, that will now carry on because you're not waiting on that. So that means the UI, scrolling, responsiveness, all that sort of stuff will carry on while this thing is doing its bit on the background.
Okay.
I was going to ask Ian, what happens to exceptions inside this method, Ian?
So, exceptions...
that might be for tomorrow's session.
There is more detail than I was going to go into in this little bit of the demo, but with the async await keywords, exception handling is again, it's quite intuitive. We can wrap this call in a try-catch block, and the exception that gets thrown within the service.loadUsersAsync method will get bubbled up to us, and we can catch that exception within this block of code here.
So the session this time tomorrow, 11:12 tomorrow, we go into that exception handling in a bit more detail because there are some gotchas. Yeah, so if we were calling this void method and saying just go off and do your thing, then yes, we've got a problem. If it throws an exception inside there, we don't catch it inside there, so yeah.
So so that's async await in a 5-minute nutshell. I hope you can see that there's a whole heap more for you guys to get in, dig in, and investigate around this. I would suggest you come this time tomorrow. Hey, Christian over there.
The question was, does it make sense to return any value after the await keyword?
So
what we're doing with the result of the await, the user collection, is we're doing work with that. So. The load users async does have a return value of task of user collection, and then we're going through those users and adding them to our own, to our users collection, which is, what is the users collection then?
So the users collection is the observable collection that's in the view model, that the view binds to that users collection. Anything we put in this property, this users property here, this is going to show up on our screen.
Does that answer your question, sorry?
Basically, if you have the async keyword, can you have anything under the void?
Yeah, so I mean...
Oh, in terms of return types here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay. So what could you return from this method? Well, let's look at this one, which is also an awaitable method. I just go to the implementation of that. This is a task of user collection, okay? So if it's an async method, it needs to return... It needs to not have a return. It's either void, or it needs to return some kind of a task. And that task can be a generic task, so you can... return a task of string or int, or in this case, user collection.
Yeah, so I think in a more complete application rather than demo application, you would be doing, so getting users and adding them to the screen is kind of a, it works or it doesn't work. And if it doesn't work, you probably want to send a message, maybe set a message somewhere or set an event that's going to say to the UI, to the user, something's gone wrong. Okay, so you might want to do that on a return, or you might want to do it via a messaging infrastructure or something else.
Okay, so I'm going to move on. I've got one more demo to do, and we hopefully will get a bit of an early break away for lunch.
Yay!
The last thing I'm going to do, we talked about win as one, and what does win as one mean? It means giving our users, the users of our application, giving them a real consistent experience with the Windows platform. Now, I've been using Windows 8 for a month or two now. Ben and the rest of the Marco Metro guys have been using it for longer than that, and I can tell you, it takes you a day or two to completely get your head around the way it works. And any hysterics you might have heard about there not being start buttons is instantly forgotten. And you get used to the way that Windows 8 works. For example, you're in an app, you're looking for something. So we're in our Stack Overflow user app, but we're interested in more than just the top 30 users. We actually want to go and find the bloke called Bob or the girl called Jane. Okay. So there's no reason for me to create some specific search panel for that requirement. I don't need to create an explicit page that has search boxes and search buttons, because that UI already exists in the Windows platform, and all we need to do is hook into it.
I think someone's leaning on the light switch.
They could be doing it.
Session.
They could be doing it for fun. So the first thing we need to do is go into the manifest here. And the manifest contains a bunch of stuff. The thing I'm going to show you first is the declarations tab. Is that font big enough? Can you see that? So three tabs across the top here: application UI, capabilities, and we've gone into declarations here. And I'm going to add a search declaration. I'm going to hit add, and I've now made my application search compatible with Windows 8. It literally was that simple. That means that if anybody were to perform a search in Windows 8, it will now call into our application code. It will call into this app.
And that will also cause your app to show up on the list of searchable applications. Okay. And what happens with that list of searchable applications is the more you use them, the more they come to the top. So if you're building an app for someone else who has an important brand, then tell them about this, because basically it means anytime anyone searches, they get an eyeful of the brand down there, the icon.
Okay. So earlier on we highlighted the on launched code. Now this is the code that gets run when the user hits the tile on the start menu. What we want to do is launch the code when the user's searched in from Windows 8. So it's a different override. And all we need to do is I'm going to override the onSearchActivated method. And I'm going to steal the code from the onLaunched code there and paste that in there. But it's subtly different. When we launch the app, we go to our main page, and it's the page with the big buttons that's apparently not on grid. This page, we want to launch straight into the user's page, go straight into the user's results page. So when we tell the root frame to navigate, don't tell it to go to the main page, tell it to go to the user's page. And the parameter that I'm going to pass in is going to be the query text from the search. Okay, so it's as simple as that. When Windows calls into our application via a search, it's going to pass in these search event args. Within those event args, it's going to contain the query text, the text that the user just typed before they hit the search button. Okay? And as luck would have it, I've actually taken that parameter and actually passed that through to the user's page model, and that's going to activate the... It's going to go all the way through to the call to the API to say find these users. And if it's blank, it returns the top 30. And if I deploy that now, and if we put something in it, then it'll pass it all the way down, and hopefully it'll go find our users. So if I do a search, if I go Windows Q, it's going to bring up a search box for me. And we can look for developer Jane. Hopefully, that's going to find some Janes. Yay. No. I did a live demo and it worked. Clap. Sorry.
That was awesome.
Thank you.
If you have different use cases, first class citizens, say you've got users and stores,
yep,
or something, is the search smart enough to say you'd like to
So the question, yeah. The question was, if you've got different things you want to search, like users, stores, or maybe even Stack Overflow users and questions, is the search smart enough to deal with that? The flat answer is no, it's not. So you have to do that yourself. An example we've done in one of our apps is searching by birth date. So we try parse the incoming string as a date, and if it is, then we search by birth date. If it's not, we search by name. So the other way to do it is to provide a settings panel that says, what's your default search? Come in, and then in the search page have a switcher to switch between other searches. So it's not great, but if you wanted to, I mean, you could create a Google-style contextual, you know, Google-style prompted search, so they could say 2:whatever, which works in the Mail app, or you could say stores:something, rather than you can deal with that inside your app if you want. Yeah. Context. So. Again, that's up to you on that launch, on that search activated thing. You're in your app now, so you can then look at the app and say, what's currently going on? Am I on this page? You could probably do it that way too. Yeah. You could inspect the frame and say what frame is loaded, and it's all up to you.
The other thing to call out is that you don't actually have to have the app running to be able to activate the search. Now, it was in that case, but it doesn't have to be. Windows is going to call into your app at that entry point, whether the app happened to be running previously or not.
Any way to do auto, sorry? Autocomplete, yes. So there's a second type of search activation, which is search suggestion requested, I believe. And then that will, so I think, we've got an app on there, seven digital do it?
Punk it does. I haven't got it on here.
No, but what that'll do is it'll ask you for some up to 5 search results, and you can insert those, and it'll show up below the search box. And it'll ask you for, yeah. There we go, yeah. So the search, the autocomplete on the right? Oh, right.
So as I'm typing, Eric Clapton turns up. Okay, so I happened to download this album, but I haven't searched for Eric Church or Eric Prince or whoever these people are. So that's doing server-side searching in the autocomplete there, just as I'm typing.
And all the highlighting is all automatic as well, I believe, so. It's another type of launch, and when in that launch you get a object which has search suggestions, and you can just add to that list, and that's all you do. And Windows renders them. Windows will, you know, you can add an image, you can add 2 lines of text, it does it all for you.
Got a question here? No. So. Okay.
So the question was, for anyone who didn't hear it, the question was, does that mean in Windows 8 every search I do will be hitting Facebook? No.
So at the moment, this search is happening on the 7 Digital Music Store because that's what's here. I could run that same search against people and it won't find anybody. Finance, it won't find anybody.
So when Ian clicks those other applications, it fires an event into the application. So it's a really important question. There you go, Eric.
Oh, well, there you go.
So this is a really important feature, and it's also important for security. And all of the way all of these contracts work, this whole Winners One thing works, is it's a very, very slim layer. It's basically just text that goes back and forth, and it's up to you what lines of code you want to run, what security you want to apply, whether you want to hit the web, all of that stuff within your app. So you have full control over what you do with that search query. And if you've got Facebook app installed and you never click on it in that search thing, then Facebook will never know you're searching for anything. It's only when you click on those search items that it will invoke the app, and Windows doesn't know anything about that either. So, yeah. Does that make sense? That answer your question?
Yeah.
Cool.
We've got like 1 more minute. Last question, anybody? Yeah.
With the bot styles, is there the new bot typefaces that website, but will you be able to have a similar platform?
Over to you, brother.
Yeah. I don't know the exact answer to the question whether it's web safe, but the fact is that it's the same font that's used in the HTML side of Windows as the XAML side of Windows, so I'd like to think it is. I don't know whether it's included on Windows. it'll probably be a I mean, it, they won't be included on Mac, so yeah. So Keith, down the end there. Right, so if you can't hear Keith, he's saying no. The answer is no. But we use Proxima Nova, which apparently is close enough for web. Yeah. I've got a few Marco Metro t-shirts here. They're small larges, if that makes sense. They're larger, but they're for small people. So any other questions? They're for small people? Let's put it this way. I'm almost a 3XL in these shirts, and I'm normally about a 1X or 2. So, yeah. So I'll give out a couple of some good questions, but any more?
Is it possible to search across multiple apps?
Is this a shirt? Yeah, not at the same time, so you're going to be clicking between them. Yep, yep.
Can you use other languages with Windows 8, like
F#? Yes. So VB and C# are supported in the .NET language. Is F#? I'm not sure.
Yep. So you can. The question is, can you use other languages? Does it have to be C#? The answer is no. You can use underneath the XAML layer. You can use a .NET-like language like VB or C#. You can use. I think you can use F#. You can definitely use C++ under XAML.
Yep.
Alternately, you could put an HTML layer, and underneath that, you could write your app in JavaScript. And it will all render as an app on the Windows 8 platform. Yeah.
So we're on time. I'll give these shirts to a couple of guys who asked good questions before. We'll be at the Nokia stand right now. You can come and talk to us now. We'll be over at the Nokia stand in the marketplace. And otherwise, thanks.